up high here. Sorry I wasn't here yesterday. My yearly encounter with the Russian counselor here.
Yesterday, or the day before, we talked a little bit about the external reasons for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. This is going to be all right. Yeah. Does everyone else stand up here, or they sit down? Or it's a little strange standing up. What? Yeah. It's anyhow. We're going to do a little diagrams here eventually. Otherwise, it's like talking from a mountain or something. I feel like I'm giving the Ten Commandments. We talked something about Lord Chaitanya's external reasons for appearing. Of course, they're not external. We think of external as being material and internal being spiritual. But there's no difference between Lord Chaitanya's external and internal. The difference is that externally we can perform the same activities as Lord Chaitanya and not have the same internal experience. But Lord Chaitanya, his external activities are a manifestation of his internal mood. So we also have to have the same thing. In other words, our external activities should be a manifestation of our internal mood, and our internal mood should help us develop our internal experience. It's something like a dharma and knowledge, or jnana. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna was asking him, Jayasi chat karmanaste mata bhuta janardana, Tat kim karmani gore mam, niyo jayasi keshava. Arjuna was a little bewildered at the end of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, because apparently Krishna was telling Arjuna that you should do your duty. But then he says, actually, better than doing your duty is to use your intelligence. So Arjuna was thinking that better to use my intelligence and go into the forest. So he's asking Krishna, you tell me it is better to use intelligence, so certainly it's better than going around killing people. That doesn't seem very intelligent. So maybe I should give up my prescribed duty and go into the forest. But then, Krishna, so he says, Vyavishreneva vyakyena buddhi moha yasiva me tad ekam varanischitya yena shreyaham apnuyam. So Arjuna is more or less telling Arjuna, vyavishrayena, vyavishrayena, which means to get mixed up. So your words seem all mixed up. It seems like you're deliberately confusing me by mixing up your words. Vyavishrayena, vyakyena, buddhi moha, yasiva me. So my intelligence is just becoming bewildered. First you tell me to use intelligence, but then by your words, I'm becoming completely mixed up. I can't understand what's going on. So it seemed like Arjuna was criticizing Arjuna, except for the word use, vyavishrayena vyakyena buddhi moha yasiva me tad ekam vada nischitya yena shreyaham apnuyam. So apparently Arjuna is saying, you're just using all these words, telling me I should use my intelligence, but your words are just bewildering my intelligence. So maybe you can make it a little clearer. So Arjuna kind of softens it a little bit. So he said, apparently, you're using words to bewilder me. So then Krishna says, Lokesmin dvi vida nishta puro prokta mayanaga jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. So Krishna says, actually, there are two paths. The path of knowledge and the path of devotion, or the path of work. But actually, they're not really contradictory. They're the same path, but different stages of the same path. In other words, in the beginning we may learn just what to do that correctly, and then gradually we understand what is the results, or we experience what is the results of doing things correctly, internally. So Prabhupada said it's just like knowledge and religiosity. So knowledge or intelligence is supposed to give us a perspective how to do things nicely. And when we do things nicely, that should bring us to a higher level of consciousness, of realization. And if we do things nicely, when we get a higher level of realization, that should help our buddhi, our intelligence, to actually have see things properly, and therefore we actually develop real faith. So similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he displayed externally the Sankirtan movement, chanting Hare Krishna. He also showed us the different stages of development, from becoming a scholar to becoming a devotee to becoming an ecstatic devotee. And at the same time, he preached the chanting of Hare Krishna. So what does that have to do with us? Well, beginning with the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a description about Srimati Radharani. Because first of all, the description of Lord Krishna is given. That Lord Krishna is not an ordinary personality. He's the, as we've heard many times, he's the maintainer of all the universes. And he rests in the universe, all the universes, as the super soul. So anyone from whom just a fragment of his energies is pervading all this universes, all the universes, and all the universes put together are just a fraction of his opulence. So how can we imagine such a personality? It's very difficult to imagine such a personality, and sometimes we have difficulty trying to figure out what Krishna is like. But then we find out that Krishna, he's submissive to Srimati Radharani, this great personality, so majestic, controlling all the Brahmas and all the universes. As we've heard one time when Lord Brahma came to visit Lord Krishna at Dwarka, and he knocked on the door, knock, knock, who's there? It's Brahma. Yes, Brahma, which Brahma? What do you mean, which Brahma? It's the Brahma from this universe. So he said, oh, wait one second. I'll go and tell Lord Krishna you're here. And he said, all right, which Brahma are you? So he said, the four-headed Brahma, this, the father of the four Kumaras. What more do you want? You want my passport, my driver's license? It's Brahma. So then he went to see Lord Krishna, and they had some discussion on managing the universe. And then he said, all right, why were you asking which Brahma? You know, are there more than one Brahmas in the universe? So Krishna said, wait one second. And without getting on his cell phone or anything, because his power of communication is way beyond that, suddenly all these Brahmas appeared from seeming nowhere. And some of the Brahmas had 10 heads, some of them had 100 heads, some of them had 1 million heads, some of them had 10 million heads. So think about that for a while. That's enough to meditate for 1 hour. 10 million heads. Just imagine if you had got a headache. Yeah. So Brahma was amazed. He was, because he saw himself to be just like is described, a squirrel or a rabbit in the midst of huge elephants. And then not only the Brahmas came and they were offering their respects by bowing down their 10 heads or 100 heads or 10 million heads down, making a tremendous roar by their helmets, but then suddenly all the Shivas came, and also they had all different kinds of numbers of heads. Our Shiva has Panchamukha, 5 heads, but even the Shivas had many different heads, and all these Indras came. So Brahma was about to have a, who knows what was about to happen to Brahma. So he was feeling himself to be as insignificant as an ordinary insect. And then he realized that he was not actually as important as he was imagining himself to be. So sometimes we also feel like that. We may think ourselves to be quite important, or we may think ourselves to be quite insignificant. But even Lord Brahma feels himself somewhat insignificant. So we take this as being bad. Oh, poor Brahma. He was feeling kind of good for a while. He earned it. He did so many pious activities. And somehow or another, Krishna displayed his opulence, and he began to feel quite humble. But we have to understand, as we'll find out from the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila, that Krishna himself is quite humble. It is not that, although Krishna is so majestic, so opulent, but one of his qualities is he's the most humble. As he's the greatest, he's also the most humble out of them all, out of all of us. And who is he humble before? How does he display that humility? He especially displays that humility in front of Srimati Radharani. That this is one of his inconceivable attributes, that Srimati Radharani, sometimes she gets mad at Krishna, anger. This is called man. And Krishna has to fall down at her lotus feet, begging forgiveness. And sometimes Srimati Radharani says, too late, sorry, no forgiveness. And then Krishna has to sit, you know, go somewhere and lament. Krishna never laments. We should not think that. One time, one of the artists showed Prabhupada a picture of Krishna lamenting separation from Srimati Radharani. But Prabhupada did not like this picture very much. He said that Krishna, actually, he never laments. He's always in ecstasy. That even these pastimes of man, this is not some ordinary lamentation or anger. It is completely transcendental, of the nature of transcendental ecstasy and bliss and pleasure. But Krishna is very humble before Srimati Radharani. Not always. Of course, their relationship is not that Krishna is in awe and reverence of Srimati Radharani. But as we find from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that although he says, I am so majestic, that everyone in all the three worlds are worshiping me, that if they get a little fraction of my association, then everyone becomes completely ecstatic. But when I catch the scent of Srimati Radharani, then my heart starts to beat faster. When I hear her voice, then I become bewildered in ecstasy. That when I am associating with her, then I become also subordinate to her. So Krishna also is subordinate to Srimati Radharani, and we have to see what is Srimati Radharani's mood. Srimati Radharani is a Mahabhagavat devotee of Krishna, and her mood is that she's the lowest of all the devotees. She's thinking that all these gopis, they're putting me forward because they're so nice. Actually, I'm not a very advanced devotee. We find in some of the Acharya's writings that Srimati Radharani is thinking that actually I have not met Krishna very much. This is called Purva Rag. I've never really associated with Krishna very much. I may have met him briefly for some time. It was very ecstatic, but actually I don't know Krishna that well. I'm looking forward to the time when I can actually meet Krishna and have his association. So it's not that Srimati Radharani is thinking that eternally I've associated with Krishna and tonight's the Rasa dance, same old dance. I know it's going to happen. It's happened so many times before. And probably I'm going to leave. Krishna's going to follow me. Then I'm going to ask Krishna to get on my shoulder. He's going to disappear. I'm going to lament and all the gopis will surround me and try and give me some solace. It is not that Srimati Radharani is thinking like that at all. Actually, she's not at all thinking, I've had very much association with Krishna, although eternally she's associated with him. She's not thinking, I'm the greatest of the devotees. She's thinking, all these other devotees are so nice. but I'm just an insignificant devotee. But somehow or another, because they're so nice, they're so advanced and kind, that even an insignificant devotee like me, they're pushing forward in order to serve Krishna in some small way, as Krishna's maidservant. So she actually is always thinking that Krishna will become more happy if he can associate with my associates. So she's always trying to get Krishna to associate with her associates. She takes more pleasure when she sees Krishna with her associates than she sees that she's personally serving Krishna directly. So this is the mood of the greatest devotee who Krishna himself feels subordinate to. Now the question is, what does that have to do with us? The real thing is, it says, as we were singing this prayer by Narottam Das Thakura, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Doya Kora More Tomara Bina Ke Doyalu Jagat Samsare. My dear Lord Chaitanya, who is more merciful than you within these three worlds? In other words, Krishna himself, he's created these material worlds. We should not think, as the literature is trying to describe to us, that Krishna is, he's aloof, which is inconceivable. This is called, Krishna says, itaka shastito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tata saravani bhutani matstani tipadarya. It's inconceivable how Krishna has created everything, how Krishna is maintaining our existence at every moment, how he's making arrangements in so many inconceivable ways, and yet he's completely aloof. He has nothing to do with anything. That if we have one pencil and we lose it, or a pen, especially say we have a cross pen and we lose it, how much we lament, oh my poor cross pen, where did it go? But if Krishna, he creates universes, innumerable universes, and then at the point of time, it's time to come, the time is to destroy them, he doesn't think, oh, not again. There was this one universe, it was so nice. People love me in that universe. How can I destroy it? Can we just have it for five, eons more? No, time comes for destruction, everything. Prakriti swama vashtavya visri jami punak punak buddha gramam imang kritsnam avasham prakritir avashat. Again and again, Krishna is creating innumerable universes. Time comes and everything is annihilated. And Krishna is not lamenting. So then we get the idea, wow, what kind of person is this? Some people are in the towers in New York, and we see that somehow or another there is a disaster, a terrorist strike, the planes hit these twin towers. So many people in such an unfortunate condition, who could not feel sorry for them? And yet Krishna, the supreme terrorist of them all, at the appointed time, he's burning universes, unlimited universes, to ashes. Everyone is being destroyed, and not one tear comes out of his eyes. So what kind of God is this? Is this the God we're worshiping? Annihilating us gradually at every moment in the form of time? And at the same time, doesn't lament at all, doesn't even feel bad about it. Simply goes on playing his flute, attracting the residents of Vrindavan, enjoying transcendental pastimes, and doesn't care at all about what's happening here. But he does care. But he says, Nachamatani karmani nibandanti nadananjaya udasinadvar asinam asaktam teshu karmasu. That all this work cannot bind me, I am ever detached, seated as though neutral. So this is the secret. It is not that Krishna doesn't care. No one cares more than Krishna does. But Krishna is so inconceivable that he can be completely aloof, neutral, and at the same time be completely preoccupied with what's going on here. So how's that? Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sutra charam hetunanena kunteya jagatvi parivartate. That all this, Krishna says, this material nature is working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving beings, and by its rule, this is, creation is manifested and annihilated again and again. In other words, the whole cosmic creation that we see, and that which we don't see, is caused not at all by Krishna. Krishna has nothing to do with the cosmic creation, nor does he desire it at all. He has no desire that there be a cosmic creation. It is only because of the individual desires of the souls that Krishna manifests the material universes. Krishna would rather that all the souls are in the spiritual world. But because the souls have material desires, or desires to be separate from Krishna, therefore Krishna, he fulfills their desires. But at no moment does Krishna ever have a desire to put anyone in the material world. But he does have the desire to give the living entities a chance both to make spiritual progress and also to fulfill their material propensities. But if we really want to know Krishna, not Krishna as the judge of the material world, sitting as Paramatma, that is not to know Krishna very deeply. If we really want to know Krishna, then we have to go where he lives. We have to go into his house, and we have to meet his friends, talk to his friends, talk to his parents. If you really want to interview someone, just like they do that a lot, there's a politician or some, even a murderer, find out what is this person really like. You know, you go up to his parents, oh, he was a good kid when he was young, we don't know what happened, you know. He got into some bad association, but, you know, we brought him up right. And then you interview his wife, well, he was, you know, he was kind of weird ever since I married him, but, you know, somehow or not, I didn't think he was that weird. So to really know the person, you have to interview so many persons who know him. So that's Chaitanya Charitamrita. And generally the person knows the person the most intimate is the wife or the husband. They know them the most intimate. You know, she looks very beautiful on the stage, but I know her with the curlers in her head. I know her with, you know, you may think he's, you know, the president of the United States, but I know him as the person next to me snoring. So if you really want to get to know the person, then you can ask the persons who are most intimate. So there's no one who is more intimate with Lord Krishna than Srimati Radharani. And here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna is revealing why she's the most intimate. So I'll just write something on the board here. So of course, without going into exactly who Srimati Radharani is, because she's the pleasure potency of Krishna, not something ordinary. Now it's not that we don't have pleasure, or that we don't have a tendency or desire to seek pleasure. We have some pleasure, but the amount of pleasure that Srimati Radharani must possess in order to attract Krishna must be quite extensive. So my artwork is not very good, but stick figures I can do. We don't want to go into the details. So here is Lord Krishna. Of course, he has to have a flute. Of course, identifying Mark, he's a peacock. And here's Srimati Radharani. This is not an art class, by the way. So the first desire that Lord Krishna had, in order why he manifested as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is not that he suddenly manifested as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Eternally he has this desire. So wherever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes, That's why he's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because that's Krishna having that desire eternally to understand what is the love of Srimati Radharani. That certainly in the dealings, this is Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna. So her love manifests itself in relationship to Krishna. So Krishna must be something special also. Otherwise, she wouldn't have unlimited love, which pervades the entire spiritual world. It is not that only Lord Krishna is affected by Srimati Radharani's mood of love for Krishna, but the entire spiritual world is affected by it. Not only Goloka Vrindavan, but that mood is reflected also as the queens of Dwarka, because the queens of Dwarka are actually expansions of Srimati Radharani. I think it's in the Lalita Madhava or the Vidagdha Madhava. There it explains that Srimati Radharani was feeling so much separation from Lord Krishna that her and Lalita entered into Jamuna to end their lives when Krishna had gone to Mathura. But that wasn't the end of Srimati Radharani. Instead, the sun god took her and brought her, gave her to, what's his name? The one who had these Shaimantaka jewels, Satrajit. So he gave Srimati Radharani to Satrajit, along with the Shaimantaka jewel, which was the Kastubha jewel from Krishna. And then Satrajit, eventually when he was feeling some lamentation, he gave Srimati Radharani in the form of Satyabhama to Lord Krishna as one of his queens. So his queen, other queens such as Chandralavi, how do you pronounce the name? Chandravali is easier. Chandravali. Or Chandravali? Oh. Chandravali. Okay. Chandravali is actually, in Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, she's Rukmini. But she herself is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So, the queens of Dwarka, the Lakshmis in Vaikuntha, they're all manifestations of Prabhava and Vilas, Prabhava Vilas and Prabhava Vikash of Srimati Radharani. Technical things, but these are different manifestations of Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna to serve Krishna in so many different manifestations. So Srimati Radharani has unlimited love. In the pastimes of Krishna and Radharani, Krishna, of course, enjoys Radharani's company, but her love for Krishna is unlimited. And therefore, he can't compete. Although he loves Srimati Radharani, but her love for him is even greater than what he can conceive of. And then, that's one. I drew this. What do we do here? The second reason, so Lord Krishna wants to experience Srimati Radharani's love. Because that love, as the Ashraya, there's what's called the Ashraya and the Vishaya. This is something technical. And there are five different types of bhavas known as Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyabhichari Bhava, and Stayi Bhava. So in the first one that we had, there is a division of Vibhava called Alambana and Udipan. So Alambana is divided up into Ashraya and Vishaya. So we may think this is quite technical, but actually this is part of everyone's experience, even in the material world. This is not something, although it's technically labeled like that, but always in the relation of loved and lover, there's always someone who is the reservoir of love. That's called the Ashraya. And there's always the object of love, called the Vishaya. Just like between Romeo and Juliet. So Romeo, Juliet was the reservoir of love for Romeo. Of course, we can also say that Romeo was the reservoir of love for Juliet. But here, since we're talking from this point of view of Krishna consciousness, the reservoir of love in this particular exchange of Madhurya Rasa is Srimati Radharani. And Madhurya Rasa being the intensified form of all the rasas, as we mentioned the other time, based upon service. That's simply the desire to please, which is love. Unless you desire to please someone, how can you say you love them? Because that desire to please is intensified or purified in Shantarasa, which is the beginning, and then it develops actually in Dasya Rasa through active service to actually try to please the person. In the material world, no one is trying to please anyone here. Everyone is trying to please their senses. But Dasya Rasa means that one is actually actively trying to please Krishna. And that desire to please Krishna intensifies even more in Sakya Rasa, even more in Vatsalya Rasa, and in Madhurya Rasa, up to the platform of Srimati Radharani. It's the most intense service attitude possible. So she's the reservoir of that service attitude, which is called love or prema. Actually, prema goes from prema. The next stage is called sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, mahabhava. And she's the limit of mahabhava, which is the limit of the desire to please Krishna. So she's the ashraya. So Krishna, that intense desire to please Krishna, Krishna didn't find within himself. So he wants to experience eternally. What is that intensified desire to please him? And the second reason is that Krishna is the reservoir of all sweetness. Krishna is completely sweet. He has unlimited qualities. Out of those 64 qualities, he has four qualities that no one else can even conceive of. One of them is he plays on his flute. When he plays on his flute, everything becomes bewildered. In this material world, as Vyasaki Prabhu had mentioned, sometimes people can give up anything. I think it was you who mentioned, they can give up anything. They can even give up their girlfriend, but they can't give up their music. So where does this come from? Why is it that music is so attractive? Because Krishna is playing on his flute, and that flute sound is so attractive that when even the inanimate objects hear it, like the river Jamuna, it becomes frozen in ecstasy. And the mountains start to melt out of ecstasy. So imagine if you could make a song like that, you had a band, that when you played the music, that all the rivers suddenly became solid out of ecstasy, and all the rocks started to melt, and all the inanimate objects, like even the cows, they would simply, tears would flow from their eyes. You'd certainly get a bestseller, I'm sure. You'd be top of the charts for a long time. So Lord Krishna has been playing on the fifth note in Vrindavan, and all living entities have been attracted to it eternally. So he has a flute. And when he comes home at night playing on his flute, everyone goes completely ecstatic. They rush out of their houses. The ladies, if they haven't put on their clothes properly, it doesn't really matter. As soon as they hear that flute, that Krishna is coming back, as we find out sometimes, they put the tops of their clothes on the bottom on the top, half makeup on. Everyone just rushes out of the house to see Krishna. And Krishna is surrounded by loving associates who are endowed with wonderful love of God, not ordinary personalities, the gopis or the cowherd boys or Mother Jasoda. They themselves are more powerful than millions of Brahmas, and they're endowed with wonderful love of God. He has an all-sweet, attractive beauty that even Narayan in Vaikuntha is attracted by. Narayan, who's creating millions of universes, a partial expansion of Narayan, who's creating millions of universes, is attracted by the sweetness of Krishna's beauty. And he has pastimes which are inconceivable, that are especially his childhood pastimes or his other pastimes. They're inconceivably sweet and beautiful. So Krishna is a reservoir of all sweetness with unlimited qualities. But Srimati Radharani, she, by her love, as we said before, by her love, she's able to appreciate and experience those qualities more than in a level to an extent that no one else can experience or appreciate. So to be able to appreciate, the experience what Srimati Radharani is experiencing when she experiences the wonderful sweetness of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is manifested. And the last one is, in the exchange between Radha and Krishna, that Srimati Radharani and the gopis, they're completely selfless. They have no thought or desire other than Krishna's happiness. And Krishna wants to make them happy also. He's happy by seeing them happy. But as soon as they see that Krishna's happy by their dressing nicely or their decorating themselves nicely, preparing things nicely for Krishna. So when they see that Krishna's happy by seeing their decorations or their bodily beauty, then they become happy by seeing that Krishna's happy. And when Krishna sees that they're happy, then he becomes happier. And when they see that Krishna's becoming happier, they become even more happy. So eternally there's a competition, but that competition is completely selfless, because the competition is based upon the other person's happiness, to make them even happier, without any other desire than to see their happiness. And even if sometimes there is some impediment to their service, just like Daruka, he was so ecstatic seeing Krishna that tears were in his eyes, but that was interfering with his service of serving Krishna. So he began to curse these tears which were interfering with his service. Therefore, in the exchange between Radha and Krishna, the selfless love between Radha and Krishna makes Srimati Radharani's heart and that the heart of the gopi so pure that they're able to experience unlimited happiness by tasting the sweetness and their own personal love. Their happiness is unlimited, even more than Krishna's happiness, because their selfless love is inconceivable. Therefore, to experience that selflessness of the gopis, Lord Krishna takes the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is very nice for us, because as I mentioned before, in the material world, everyone wants to become God. And like God, he wants to become God's devotee. He gets more pleasure from becoming in his form as God's devotee than he does in his form as God. So we're lucky, because we're always insignificant eternally in the material world. Material world means a competition, who's the greatest. So in this material world, someone may be a little greater than us, someone may be a lot greater than us. But even though someone may be a lot greater than us, still there is someone greater than them. And in the competition, who's the greatest, ultimately in relationship to Krishna, everyone is insignificant. But the only difference is that in the material world, although we're all insignificant in relationship to Krishna, still we're thinking we're significant in relationship to others, or we're greater than others. There's a competition to become who's the greatest. But that competition to become the greatest generally manifests itself as envy and other undesirable material qualities. But when we actually find out how great the greatest is, and how great the greatest servants are, then the result is that we can actually become humble, humble servants of the greatest. And by the more we become humble servants of the greatest, in the same mood as Lord Krishna has, that he desires in the service, the greatest devotees, the Mahabhagavats, are the humblest. They're the most submissive. They're the most subordinate. They're the most opposite of the materialistic concept of life. So when we realize how sweet Krishna is, how sweet the loving feelings of Srimati Radharani are, how wonderful their selfless love for Krishna is, then when the more we appreciate them, then the more we can actually manifest our natural position as Krishna's eternal servant, dasa, dasa, anudasa, the servants of Krishna's servants. Then the more we can appreciate anyone who's doing any service to Krishna, the more we do that, then the more Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can give us his mercy. Patita pavana, hetu tava avatar, that his mission is to come to deliver the most fallen. Of course, that most fallen doesn't mean that in order to become qualified, we have to break all the principles the most. Then when we become the most fallen, Lord Chaitanya will give us his mercy. Right now I'm following, the principles, but I'm not getting his mercy, so if I really become the most fallen, then I'll really get his mercy. No, actually, the real thing is that in the material world, everyone is fallen, because that's what the material world means. And to get out of the material world means we have to realize that we actually are fallen. We're fallen out of our original position as Krishna's eternal servants, in that same loving exchanges, realizing those who are in the spiritual world, they have the same mood as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, the same mood as Srimati Radharani. They, by their love, experience so much pleasure, and they give pleasure to Krishna simply by loving Krishna. Just like we try to get get happiness by loving dead energy, dead material energy. So it's not that we've given up the idea of deity worship. We've just changed the deity from Krishna to this dead material body. So we try to love this dead material body, and we may get some pleasure out of loving this dead material body, or mind, subtle mind, or whatever, intelligence. But the reciprocation is not very extensive. Because after all, no matter what body we have, ultimately it deteriorates and dies, and leaves us, throws us out of the body, who knows where. But our loving propensity is there, and it gives us some happiness. But when our loving propensity is directed towards the real deity, Lord Krishna and his associates, then it gives us unlimited pleasure. And when we realize how wonderful Krishna is, much more wonderful than we can even conceive of, then our happiness increases also unlimitedly. And when we come to the platform of selfless love without a material conception of life, then we're in our spiritual body again, where there's no more material necessities, and there is no more, the only necessity is to please Krishna. But the more Krishna becomes pleased, then the more our happiness increases, even more unlimitedly than even Krishna's happiness increases. In other words, in our original position, everything is fantastic. In our present position, everything is horrible. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows us what is the platform, how to achieve it. And it's more or less exactly the opposite of how we've been trained up in the material conception of life. So that's what makes it a little difficult, because in the material conception of life, this body is the deity, and in the spiritual conception of life, Krishna is the deity. That's the only difference. In the material concept of life, we're being trained to love the body and to appreciate it and appreciate things in relationship to our body. And in the spiritual world, where Krishna is the deity, we're meant to learn how to appreciate him and things in relationship to Krishna. Luckily, everyone and everything has a relationship to Krishna. Well, factually, nothing really has a relationship to this body or our subtle mind, which is just a product of our mental conceptions, manifested through the illusory energy. So we're very fortunate that we have this opportunity to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and if we understand these feelings that Lord Krishna himself has and appreciate what a wonderful opportunity we have to render service, that Krishna himself wants to become a servant, so we shouldn't lament, oh, I couldn't make it as a master, now I got to try and make it as the servant. No, we should become happy that we have the greatest opportunity to learn what real service is, because we're eternally servants, but here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will reveal to us what the real object of service is, namely Lord Krishna and his associates, and what the wonderful results of such service are. So, that's, we'll stop there for now. Are there any questions?
I don't have a question which is related to Lord Chaitanya, it's more related to Lord Krishna, because it's okay.
They're similar.
Okay. Which kind of deities worshipping devotees in Dwaraka? Because Krishna was present, it was also devotees worshipping.
Well, just like in Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj has a deity of Narayan. He thinks Narayan is God. So he prays to Narayan all the time to please protect Krishna. So in Dwaraka also they have deities of Narayan. They believe that Narayan is God there. So they pray to Narayan.
Okay, and if some kind of form of deity worship is in Goloka Vrindavan, in spiritual world, or...
Yeah, they worship Narayan.
In Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna is present and everybody worships Narayan?
Well... The real deity is Krishna.
Yes.
But the official deity is Narayan.
Okay.
Yes. Excuse me?
If Krishna is God, then it gets in the way of the love. He's just the son of Mother Yashoda.
They don't really take Narayan very seriously, but they believe he's powerful. The only reason why they worship Narayan is because they figure that he can do something good for Krishna. Because their real love is for Krishna. Because, as Vyasaki Prabhu was pointing out, that you can explain it.
Well, as far as I know from what Prabhupada said, that they worship Narayan with awe and reverence, you know, they bow down. But with Krishna, they have so much love. But if they thought that he was God, the creator, all-powerful and everything, that would spoil the love, that would get in the way of the love. But because they just think he's the son of Mother Yashoda, they can love him without any reservations. And there's no, you know, they love him because he's who he is, not because he's God, he's got some high position or something. Because he doesn't have a high position, he's just a cowherd boy. So they just love him for who he is.
He's a coward boy. Sometimes he gets a little puffed up, so they have to put him in his place. You know, sometimes he lifts a hill like Govardhan, and they think he gets a little proud, so they say, all right, Krishna, so you lift a Govardhan, that's all right. Well, just transfer it, you know, to Nanda Maharaj. You know, let the coward boy man, and then we can massage your hand for a while. But... Yeah, it's inconceivable what the relationship is with Krishna, but Krishna there, he's the most lovable, just because he actually tries to please everyone. For the elderly members, he's the most submissive, cowherd boy. He always is very respectful, he always does service for them. Even his stealing the butter. You know, for them they think, well, you know, they take it as a wonderful pastime. I mean, God, Narayan's not going to come to their house and steal their butter. But a hungry cowherd boy, you know, comes to their house and steals their butter, but he's so beautiful. And he has so many, you know, he's so witty, and he's so many wonderful ways of dealing with them. So they're just enchanted by him. And they actually think, Mother Yashoda and the Damodar pastime, she's thinking, my dear little boy, somehow or another, he's become a kleptomaniac. It's because maybe the cows that are giving the milk, maybe they're not actually satisfying him. So she gets special cows, she gives them special grass, she herself personally milks the cows, She herself prepares the butter, and she's thinking, well, maybe with the best cows, the best grass, the best preparation, then Krishna, if he eats this butter, then he'll become satisfied, and he won't go out and steal to all the other houses. So she thinks that Krishna is completely dependent on her, and then unless he makes a special effort for this beautiful little cowherd boy of hers, then who knows how he's going to grow up? Who knows what's going to happen to him? So this thinking Krishna is an ordinary person certainly produces in many different ways extraordinary love that the residents of Vrindavan have, which is not possible in the other manifestations of Lord Krishna. Yes.
In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, do the devotees, the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they see him as Krishna or as Srimati Radharani?
Do they think they're dealing with Krishna or Srimati
Radharani? How they relate to him?
Generally, most of them relate to him in the mood of awe and reverence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance was more or less related in that mood. There are some exceptions, though. For instance, Jagannanda Pandit and Gadadhar Pandit, they had some special relationship with Lord Chaitanya. But generally, he's related to in the form of Dasya Rasa. Service. They serve the Sankirtan movement. They, more or less, they all participate in strength. Their service is more mostly to heighten his feelings of separation or to mitigate his feelings of separation. So he's related to it as a very, you know, as the in the mood of Dasya Rasa. But his mood that he emanates is Madhurya Rasa, the feeling of separation from Krishna. So Madhurya Rasa, or the feeling of Vipralamba Seva, is not only Madhurya Rasa, it's also and also Sakya Rasa and Vatsalya Rasa. They're always feeling separation. So the mood that he emanates is picked up by those his associates in many different ways, just like he has associates in all the different rasas. But the mood he emanates also produces that feeling of separation from Lord Krishna and them, and intensifies their relationship with Lord Krishna personally. So just like Anupam or Murari Gupta, they're in the mood of worshipping Lord Ramachandra. But because associating with Lord Chaitanya, they understood that he was Lord Krishna, feeling separation, and therefore their feelings of separation from their worshipful deity became increased also by such association.
And Gadadhar Pandit? Because he's
a special personality. Because he's a manifestation of Vrindavaneshwari, an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So they had a very special relationship. It wasn't exactly in the same rasa. For Jagannanda Pandit, we can see that it was more or less in the mood of Satyabhama. But we don't have to, you know, to understand these things is, I think we have to come to Dasya Rasa first. Or let's try Shanta Rasa first. Because then we can get some insights. Well, we will get insights. We do get insights as we progress. But the actual rasa relationship that these devotees have, we'll be able to fully understand when we actually come to our natural rasa also. Anything else? Yes.
In the handout you gave us, there's a description or a short explanation of the three reasons or internal reasons for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Can you explain the difference between the first
and the third?
The third, because I mean I don't understand anything.
Yes, tomorrow we'll explain about the difference between the first and the third. But we will. Actually, we'll go over each one of them and explain in more detail. But just as a quick answer, which we'll explain more, there's a difference between taking the position, just like you may love someone, but that doesn't mean that your beloved necessarily reciprocates. You give so much love to someone, but they don't necessarily reciprocate. So you're the ashraya of love, and whether your vishaya reciprocates or not, you may love just like Al Capone's mother loved Al Capone, but he may not have reciprocated completely the loving potential. Therefore, still, it doesn't mean that mother, you know, Al Capone wasn't, her love was not expanding. Now, as the last one, you may love someone, but in terms of taking pleasure from experiencing their love and your love, your heart becoming purer and purer, the more they you see their happiness. And because you're experiencing their happiness, your heart is becoming more and more intensified to serve them even more selflessly. So that's a different aspect of love. You may love someone, but your heart becoming more and more purified, more and more anxious to please your love, beloved, and therefore getting even more and more happiness by seeing your love, beloved being pleased. That's a different stage of love.
So you could say that the third reason specifically is the reason why the ecstasy in the spiritual world is ever increasing, more than the first reason, or?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No. I couldn't. I don't know. But either one of them, Srimati Radharani's propensity to love is unlimited, and of course her Krishna is not an ordinary personality. He also loves. So Srimati Radharani, she has unlimited love, and of course they're all interconnected. You can't say, well, now's my time to love Krishna, now's my time to take happiness from loving Krishna, now's my time to feel the happiness or to experience the different qualities of Krishna. They're all intercombined. They're just different aspects of the same bhakti in relation to Srimati Radharani. But bhakti is not something static, it's something very dynamic. So by analyzing it in the dynamics of love, then we can appreciate more the different aspects. So each one of these dynamics is unlimited in the relation between Radha and Krishna, or the relation between the residents of Vrindavan and Lord Krishna. And when we analyze them, then we can see that in the material world, sometimes some of the dynamics are there, and some of them aren't. Some of them are more displayed in a higher degree, and sometimes not. But these dynamics are unlimited in the spiritual world, and ever increasing. Okay, so thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivrinda ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.